Hello and welcome to episode 9 of the Pigskin Prodigies podcast. I'm Dan Musso and I'm joined by Kevin Bargender, and today we're going to be talking about Packers versus Chargers. We're going to preview the upcoming Packers versus Panthers game, and we're also going to talk about our NFL award picks at the midseason point. But I wanted to start off by first recapping the Packers versus Chargers game this past weekend. So Packers were handed their second loss of the season last Sunday against the Chargers. In Los Angeles, they lost 26-11, and that dropped their record to 7-2 on the season. So a couple of quick thoughts on that before I turn it over to you. Offense, well, actually, both sides of the ball really struggled, but I want to start by talking about the offense. So offense only managed 206 total yards. Rodgers only passed for 161, and then the running backs combined, Jamal Williams and Aaron Jones, combined for just 45 yards of rushing in this game. The wide receivers weren't really that effective. I know Davante Adams came back. He caught 7 balls, but only had 41 receiving yards on those catches. And Packers' other receivers didn't do much else either. Alan Lazard was the leading receiver with 3 catches for 44 yards. Jake Kumerow didn't catch a pass. Marquez Valdes-Scantling, I don't think, was even targeted in this game. And then Geronimo Allison caught just 2 passes for 21 yards. So passing offense especially was pretty worrisome in this game. But the run-pass balance was kind of different than I expected going into this game, because they only ran the ball 11 times, and I thought they'd lean a little more heavily on Aaron Jones. I know in the few times they did run, they didn't run super effectively. They had some 5-7-yard runs, but didn't really get a lot going on the small number of times that they did run. And then, obviously, the passing game really didn't generate much either. And I think a lot of that had to do with the pass protection in this game. It's not all in the receivers, I don't think, but I think they do bear some of the responsibility. But the offensive tackles struggled more than I thought they would in this game, because, you know, with how well they played this season, I thought they'd do a little better than they did, but it just seemed like Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram were too much for them at times. I know they both gave up 1.5 sacks, and they were beaten a couple other times. They gave up a couple other pressures, and so did the interior offensive line, especially when they lined up both Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram on the same side of the field. I know Billy Turner got beat a couple times too when they did that. So the offensive line really struggled in this game more than I thought they would, and I think that was a big reason that they couldn't get much going on offense. So now on the defensive side of the ball, we saw some struggles that we were kind of seeing the past few weeks. Gave up too many big plays again. Jair Alexander got beat a couple times, surprisingly, by Mike Williams, and gave up some pretty big plays on receptions, one on a catch and run, one just a deep ball. And then other things that we saw them struggle with in this game, and something that's kind of become a trend, is that when they're not getting a lot of pressure, like they didn't as much last week, we're seeing those bigger plays more often, and the pass defense is getting exposed more so. And then also when they're not forcing turnovers like they were early in the season, They just been giving up more big plays and giving up more points and allowing drives to go on longer. So then,
yeah. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, just last point I wanted to make: run defense continued to be a major issue this week for the Packers defense. Melvin Gordon rushed for 80 yards on 20 attempts, and Austin Eckler rushed for 70 yards on 12 attempts. So they're really giving up a lot of yards on the ground, and that's allowing opposing offenses to stay on the field for a long time. And I think that is part of the reason that the Packers defense has kind of faltered these last few weeks, because they've been on the field so long, because they've allowed drives to be sustained for so long. So now I want to turn it over to you. What were your thoughts and takeaways from this game?
Yeah, I mean, we kind of saw a little bit of this in week 2 versus the Vikings. I know people are saying that, oh, yeah, Dalvin Cook's going to run for a bunch of yards. It's like, oh, no, there's no way. And then he did. And I guess the same issues kind of proceed today. So today. So it's been a really kind of, it was an eye-opening game, but at the same time, I wouldn't read too much into it. They're on the east, or they are on the west coast, and I mean, that's a tough place to play. It was obviously not a home game, which is also not very helpful, as they had, I believe, 5 of their first 7 games at home. And so, I mean, that was incredible. So that's part of the reason why they've had such a fast start. But, you know, Davante Adams, not 100% healthy still. I mean, he's still coming back from that turf toe. I would expect him to be that way for at least this week again, and hopefully during that, like, that bye week.
Hopefully, yeah, after the bye week, he can get closer to 100%.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. During the bye week, he can finally get healthy. Otherwise, yeah, they're going to have to lean more heavily on Lazard and maybe a little bit more on Kumerow and Allison and MVS. It was kind of frustrating watching their offense. It almost didn't even look like their offense. Like, they're giving up so many sacks, and they just couldn't stop the edge rushers. So, you know how you combat that is with screen passes. I didn't see them do a ton of screen passes either. And they really didn't want to run the ball. You know, you'd think the Chargers, the middle of their defense would be a little bit softer with them crashing the edges, or at least kind of run off that crash, like let them crash down on the edges and then run right past them. So it was, like you said, very interesting play calling with only 11 rushes. After Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams had big weeks last week, and they were hardly ever involved in this game. So, I mean, Jamal Williams did get that one touchdown towards the end, but they were, yeah, not even close to being as involved as last week. So it was just kind of frustrating just seeing them really one-dimensional, and then the team shutting down that one dimension. So they looked just kind of very, very flat and just not the team that we're used to seeing. I'm really not going to put way too much into this, though. I think it's definitely not good that they lost, but it was something that, like Aaron Rodgers said, kind of some humble pie that he eats from this game. So hopefully that kind of just knocks their egos down a little bit and they play a little bit harder and realize that they're not invincible. And they can lose, especially an ugly loss like that. So, you know, they lost to the Eagles a while back, and that was kind of a close game, sort of controversial, that they couldn't even get in on the one-yard line. The game they definitely felt they could win. In this game, I don't think they ever felt they could have won that game, down by so much. So, just overall, I feel like it was a fluke week.
Yeah, I think this week was definitely a wake-up call for them. Maybe it was needed. We'll see. But I definitely think it's not, or I definitely think it is too early to panic. I think they'll be fine. They're still 7-2, and they've gotten through, I think, the tougher part of their schedule. So I think it's definitely too early to panic, and we should still be optimistic about the rest of the season because they're set up well to, you know, make a playoff run. So
I agree.
Yeah, a couple other things I just wanted to say. I would say based on the first half of the season, I've noticed a few weaknesses as far as position groups, but I want to hear your opinion in just a second after I say what I think they are in my opinion, I guess. So I would say run stuffer on the defensive line. I thought Kenny Clark would be better this year, but he's kind of tailed off the last few weeks. And then Lowry and Lancaster haven't been as good as I had anticipated, so I'd say that would be probably one of their biggest needs currently, if they're going into the offseason right now, is a run stuffer on the defensive line. And then also, this is one that I expected, inside linebacker with coverage ability. The guys that they have right now aren't really getting a ton with Martinez and B.J. Goodson. And Burks isn't even really playing that much. So I think that's one of their biggest needs, and that was one that I kind of foresaw going into the season. And then wide receiver depth. I just don't know if they have enough guys that can consistently beat man coverage and be a threat in the short to intermediate areas of the field. Like, we have Devonta Adams, who can win at all three levels of the field, but after him, you got Marquez Valdes-Scantling, who I think right now is pretty much only a deep threat, and then you've got Kumerow and Lazard, and who's the one I'm forgetting? Allison. Geronimo Allison. Who just haven't been consistent in any of those three areas, I don't think. So I'm pretty worried about their receiver depth, and I think that in the inside linebacker position and then the defensive line groups are the most worrisome so far. But what do you think?
Yeah, I would agree with all those positions. It was interesting you brought up defensive line, because that's like something that they were supposed to be really deep at this year.
That's what I thought too, yeah.
With Montrevious Adams, another guy hasn't really quite lived up to the billing yet. He's made some splash plays here and there, but he hasn't really been that, you know, average to good starter that you'd kind of hope he would be. So it's a little frustrating. And then, you know, you almost kind of like second guess yourself a little bit, letting go of a guy like Mike Daniels. Like, you know, maybe we should have hung on to him, you know. So, yeah, a team that was so deep, we thought, at least coming into the season, is a little bit weaker. I have a hard time believing that they would address the defensive line super early in the draft, especially after just re-signing Dean Lowry, but who knows. But a linebacker, I could definitely see that inside linebacker spot. I was extremely worried about it coming into the season, and it is what it is, I guess. Oren Burks, you know, they trade up for him in the third round. Didn't pan out. Still hasn't panned out, and I think he's a little bit of a failed experiment as they moved. He moved at Vanderbilt from safety to linebacker, and he's just not physically big enough to stop the run. He's fast enough to cover receivers, but just not physically big enough to stop the run. So it's such a frustrating feeling when you have basically a Pro Bowler in Blake Martinez, and then next to him you have nobody, basically. And B.J. Goodson was, I think, acquired for a seventh-round swap before the season started. So, I mean, they really didn't give up a whole lot for him. And the Giants obviously didn't think super highly of him if they would just give up a seventh-round pick. So it was just kind of a frustrating watching their run defense, because, you know, Melvin Gordon hasn't even been that great this year up until that Packer game. Mm-hmm. You know, I think he's a decent running back, but I don't think he's like 150-yard back every single week by any means. So it was really surprising a little bit to see him do that. And then, again, like you said, giving up those big pass plays, starting to plague them a little bit again. Jaire Alexander not having his typical game. But we do have to remember it's only his second season in this defense. He's, you know, sort of young still. And I think he'll get better over time. They could really use guys like Josh Jackson to also step up. I know he's been kind of a disappointment so far. But if he could play more than just special teams, that'd be great. And then I think you're definitely right on, especially with the receiving position. I think that's something they definitely have to target early and often in the offseason, whether that's free agency, which doesn't always look the most promising when it comes to offensive skill positions. But the draft is extremely deep in receivers, so I would say that that's probably almost the number one need right now. They've really struggled keeping everyone healthy and just keeping those skill. I mean, like I said earlier in a previous episode, they haven't drafted a guy higher than the third round in like forever. Mm-hmm. It's been since 2014. So, and I know they had Montgomery, and he kind of was a letdown.
Yeah.
That they had to switch him to running back. So.
Yeah, I almost wouldn't even count him because they switched him to running back as a high receiver pick.
Yeah. So I mean, it's hard to really get a gauge on like how good these guys are, because I think they're somewhat living up to expectations. I mean, MVS is a sixth round pick, and
yeah,
definitely
doing
what a sixth round pick would do, and all the other guys undrafted, and then EQ, you know, he's out for the year, and it barely. I mean, he was out for the year before it even started. A guy that we thought would, you know, make a big impact, and Gutekunst kind of downplayed it. It was like, all right, well, we want him in the future, and we kind of think that our depth is okay. Well, Darius Shepherd didn't turn out at all. Lazard definitely is beating expectations, but you know, the two veterans in MVS and Drama Allison, they have some really big games, but then they just disappear the next week. So it's just kind of confusing to watch these young receivers. And then I don't know, Devontae's recovering from that turf toe, and rightly so, that he would struggle a little bit coming back. But it's just, it's kind of frustrating that the Packers have had to focus so hard on that defense in the draft and free agency that they've hardly even addressed the receiving position, other than a fourth round pick 2 years ago on Jamon Moore, who's no longer with the team.
Mm-hmm.
So, an EQ, IR. So, I mean, the highest picked guy behind Adams is a sixth round pick, and he's playing significant snaps. Just not usually a recipe to dominate. I know that the Patriots could probably do that. I mean, they throw anybody out there and they can just somehow make magic. But, mm-hmm. you know, Rodgers is getting a little older, and it's, you know, you still have to get some talent. I mean, like when you look back, they had, you know, third, second round guys. They've kind of gotten away from that, drafting all defense. And I know it's great to that the defense has improved, but now the offense is starting to lack behind them. So you'd really like to see them address that in the offseason. And I still think this team is a year away. I know I listened to a little bit of the Packers post game on the radio, and I don't know if you do too, but I was listening to their post game, and I know Mark Tauscher said that this is still a Super Bowl team. They can still win it all. You know, I mean, it's very possible, but I just don't see it. I think they're probably still a year away. I'm kind of in the middle of it. I don't think they're going to be bad, but I also don't think they're going to be fantastic this year. Coming off two really bad seasons, so it was the depth. Yeah, like it's really not good at those three positions, and you know, running back's decent. The offensive line is okay. Quarterback is okay, I would say, as well, with Boyle. But and the defensive secondary is not the worst. And outside linebackers are great. I mean, you've got four guys that could start potentially. But, yeah, like you said, I mean, those three spots, the D-line, the inside linebackers, and the receivers are extremely, extremely thin. And I don't know. It's kind of too late in the season to really address it. With a street free agent and the trade deadline's over with, so it's they kind of are what they are, and not saying they're a bad team or anything, but I don't know if they're quite Super Bowl worthy. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know if they're ready to win the Super Bowl this year. I think going into the offseason, that's kind of what I was expecting too, because they just had so many holes to plug from last year. I didn't think they could get it all done in one offseason, so now they're kind of doing what I expected them. Well, obviously they started better than I expected, but some of the cracks that I thought were there kind of are showing up now more so as we've gotten to the middle part of the season. But yeah, I agree with what you said about the receivers. They're certainly not disappointing for where they were drafted, whether it was an undrafted free agent signing or a fifth-round pick like Marquez Valdes-Scantling was. But because the Packers are counting on those guys to be consistent starters and they haven't shown that, they're disappointing from that standpoint.
Yeah, I agree with that statement.
Yeah, so now I want to get into our next topic, which is Packers versus Panthers this upcoming weekend. So just wanted to share a few thoughts on that before I ask you about your thoughts on it. So they've got Christian McCaffrey and the Carolina Panthers coming to town this week. I'm pretty concerned about that because McCaffrey kind of presents all the problems that the Packers have shown on defense with how dynamic he is as a runner and receiver. I don't know. I think he's going to shred us both on the ground and through the air. We don't have any linebackers that can match up with him in coverage, and the run defense has just been so porous this year that I'm expecting McCaffrey to have a huge game, and I think it's going to be kind of a high-scoring game. I think the Packers will have to score a lot more, obviously, than they did last week to win this one. But what do you think about that? I'll turn it over to you now.
Yeah, I think my X factor really comes down to Kyle Allen. With Cam Newton being out for the season now, that was officially declared yesterday, I believe, and he's done. So, you know, it's Kyle Allen's show, and, you know, he was the starter at Texas A&M, and, you know, he was ahead of Kyler Murray, and I think, I don't know why I can't think of his name, Baker Mayfield. he was ahead of both of them, I believe, at one point. So it was kind of ironic, or no, the Baker went to Texas Tech, sorry. But he was, you know, a little bit highly touted, and then came out of college and wasn't drafted very high at all. Actually, was he drafted at all?
Kyle Allen? I can't remember, actually. I'll look it up right now.
It was definitely, if he was, it was like probably a fifth round pick or later. So he was definitely not expected to do a ton in the NFL. And then he comes in and starts winning games. And not just a few either. I mean, they're sitting at a pretty decent spot right now. I believe they're 5-3. So they're sitting there pretty well off. And he's a little bit fallen off his pedestal a little bit in the recent weeks. But they still have some explosive players. Not only do they have Christian McCaffrey, Curtis Samuel is an extremely explosive guy at Ohio State.
DJ Moore, too.
DJ Moore, yep. Another explosive Big Ten player. So it's a little bit worrisome that they're going to go up against these guys. They don't have like the explosive Greg Olsen as much anymore, which is nice, but they also just have all these other weapons in their offense. So I think it's going to be definitely, like you said, high scoring. The Panthers defense is okay, but not outstanding. So I could see somewhat of a closer game than last week. I expect the Packers to score something by halftime. So that was just a little disappointing last week, but I think coming home, kind of regrouping, getting motivated off of that loss, and I think that'll kind of help propel them forward. But I don't expect this to be like a gimme game by any means. I mean, I definitely respect the Panthers even without Cam Newton, and I think the Packers should too.
Yeah, Kyle Allen was a undrafted rookie last year.
Okay.
Just to clarify on that.
That's what I thought, but yeah, I mean, he had an okay career at Texas Tech, or Texas A&M, but, you know, not a guy that a lot of people expected to just really come in and play significant snaps, and look at this, I mean, he's starting for the Panthers now, and they're very much in the playoff spot contention, and definitely searching for that wild card behind the Saints. So, I mean, it's going to be kind of interesting to see how this all plays out, but I mean, the Panthers really need the win. The Packers really can't afford to lose another one heading into the bye, so kind of a really pivotal game for both teams. It would really kill the Packers, any momentum that they had going into the bye week. It would really just kind of put a damper to that, and it wouldn't leave a good feeling in the Packers faithful for 2 weeks after another loss. So I'm excited for the game. I think it's going to be a lot better, and it's going to be nice and cold in Lambeau Field, probably around 30 degrees. So those Carolina people, they'll be a little bit frozen, but hopefully the Packers can use that to their advantage and run the ball. I know they don't like doing that, but run the ball. And, you know, you've got some of the better running backs in the league, and Aaron Jones, and you know, Jamal Williams. Would be a perfect game for Jamal Williams to ground and pound. So hopefully they can get them both in the run game more involved. 30 carries between both of them would be great. So I'm a little bit just, I'm excited, but I want them to play better and play call better. So that's kind of my take on it.
Yeah, I think it'll be an exciting game, and I'm fully expecting the Packers to bounce back from last week with a win right ahead of the bye. So now I want to change the discussion over to NFL midseason awards and our selections for those at this point in the season. So I want to start off with MVP. I personally think it's Russell Wilson at this point in the season. If you look at what he's done, it's just been pretty remarkable. I'll just read off the stats real quick, and then I'll ask for what you think, who you think should win the MVP. But Here are Russell Wilson's stats for the listeners. So he's completed 200 of 293 passes for 68.3% completion percentage. He's got 2,505 passing yards. He's averaging 8.5 yards per attempt, and he's got 22 touchdowns passing and one interception and a 118.2 passer rating. So really impressive season from him. Who's your front runner for MVP at this point in the season?
You know, against the Patriots, Lamar Jackson really impressed me. And he was a guy that, you know, didn't impress me at all last year. I was like, you know what, maybe he should have been a second-round pick. He fell to the late first round. And I know you were very high on him coming out of college. I wasn't. But, you know, he's starting to look like probably one of the best, if not the best, quarterbacks in that class now that we're looking back at it. And he did have the advantage of going to a more well-established team than the Jets and the Browns, which or the Bills even. So, I mean, those three teams have been kind of dumpster fires for the last two decades. So he definitely had some advantage of coming into a really well-run Ravens team. But he's really kind of proved all his doubters wrong after the second year. I mean, he's played a lot better. Played a really great game against an undefeated team. So I feel like he's somewhat the front runner right now. And I've been following Russell Wilson closely too, and his last game was amazing. I think he's definitely has to be considered. He's had a few games where it was a little bit quieter, but it's actually, there's no real obvious MVP in my eyes. Like, everyone thought it was going to be Patrick Mahomes again, or, you know, maybe Aaron Rodgers has his bounce back season, and or maybe Tom Brady. You know, he was looking fairly good at the beginning of the season too. Mm-hmm. But I don't feel like there's any like obvious front runner like right now. But I would say it's probably between Russell Wilson and Lamar Jackson. That's who I would go with if I had to pick two. What would be your top two?
Those would probably be my top two as well at this point in the season. Got Russell Wilson one, Lamar Jackson two. A couple other honorable mentions I would say are Christian McCaffrey. I know he's a running back, but he's had an amazing season, and I'll talk a little bit more about him later. Also, Deshaun Watson I think has had a really good season. And Patrick Mahomes, I know he's missed a couple games, but his stats still stack up with some of the best quarterbacks in the league this year still. So I would put him in that discussion, and then Aaron Rodgers is up there too in that top five-ish area, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, I know he's had a few rough games, but when he does, he literally can go to the MVP form at any time. So you just like to see him do it more often and not just one out of four or five games. So if he can put together more solid performances like he did a few weeks ago, yeah, I mean, he could be up there again, but he's kind of hurt his performance again against the Chargers, and that's definitely not going to help his chances at all at getting the MVP.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree with that. So now I want to talk about Offensive Player of the Year and our picks for that award. For me, you could go with the same as MVP. You could go Russell Wilson again, or you could go Lamar Jackson, whoever you think. I'm going to go with Christian McCaffrey. I just think what he's done this year is definitely award-worthy. So I'll read off his stats right now so people can understand just how good he's been this season. So overall stats, he's got 13 total touchdowns and over 1,200 all-purpose yards, 881 rushing yards, 363 receiving yards, and then 10 rushing touchdowns, 3 receiving touchdowns, and he's averaged over 5.3 yards per carry. So he's on pace for like 2,400 all-purpose yards and 26 touchdowns. I don't know if he's going to sustain quite that pace, but even if he falls off a little bit, that's still going to be an incredible season. So I would pick him as my Offensive Player of the Year if you're not going with the same pick as the MVP. But what do you think?
Yeah, I would say he's definitely got to be up there. It's nice because both Lamar Jackson and Russell Wilson are kind of both dual-threat quarterbacks too. And you kind of look at McCaffrey, he's basically another dual threat. He can catch and run. I had him on my fantasy team, I believe it was last year, and he really tore things up and was doing really good. And then I know this year he's been just as good. I think there's like maybe one or two games where he was a little bit quiet, but overall he's been really, really solid and consistent. I think that's the biggest thing, is he's been just consistently good. So yeah, I'd agree with you actually on that, just from a consistency standpoint and from a stats standpoint too.
Mm-hmm. All right, so next award I want to talk about is Defensive Player of the Year. This one, I think there's no really obvious choice so far this year. There's a lot of guys who have been impressive, but no real like major standout that's all alone at the top. But for me, I guess my pick at this point in the season would be Myles Garrett. Right now, he's second in the league with 10 sacks. He's got 2 forced fumbles. If you watch him game to game, he's just incredibly disruptive, and I think he would be my front runner for Defensive Player of the Year right now. A couple other honorable mentions I would say are Stephon Gilmore. He's been really great this year. Chandler Jones has been awesome. Aaron Donald has still been good. I know his stats aren't going to match up to what they were last year, but he's still been really impactful, and he always is. But what do you think about Defensive Player of the Year?
You know, some guys that you did leave out, the Bosa brothers too. I mean, they've had some pretty decent games recently, and obviously Joey Bosa versus the Packers, but Nick Bosa's been definitely making some noise with the 49ers. You know, I really didn't know if he was going to come in right away and make a big impact for them, but he definitely has. So I'm really kind of, I got to say, they're at least giving me a little bit of consideration too. But when you, yeah, like Myles Garrett definitely having kind of the season that the Browns envisioned him having when they took him number one overall. So, you know, and he doesn't really even make big headlines because he plays defense for the Browns and they haven't really won a whole lot of games, so you don't hear a ton about him. But he's, yeah, like you said, I mean, 10 sacks is amazing. We're only halfway through the season, so.
Mm-hmm.
And who is number one then in the league?
Shaquille Barrett has 10.5.
Oh, yeah, okay. I remember he was leading. He's been leading for a while, but yeah, I would definitely say Myles Garrett finally kind of living up to that number one overall pick hype. And I believe it was 3 years ago or 2 years ago that that was that pick. So
2 years, yeah.
So, yeah, the Browns starting to finally see some return on investment from those high picks. I know they've been burned a lot from those high picks, but I still don't think they're a terrible team, but I don't think they're as good as they were hyped up to be. So, yeah, I would say as far as defense, like you said, there's no real front runner. But, yeah, I would say Myles Garrett definitely can help take over games on defense, especially for a very somewhat porous Cleveland team in my eyes.
All right, now I want to talk about Offensive and Defensive Rookie of the Year awards. Let's start with offense, though. My pick for that award at this point in the season is Josh Jacobs. I think he's had a very good season. I'll read off his stats here in a moment. So on 152 carries, he has 740 rushing yards, and that's 4.9 yards per carry, with 6 rushing touchdowns, and then he also had 11 receptions for 102 yards in 8 games. So he's on pace for over 1,400 rushing yards so far this season, and over 12 touchdowns. So he's been really impressive. I think he's been the biggest standout on offense so far this year, if you're looking at skill position players. The only other one, I think, or a couple other ones that are behind him, but also in the discussion, I think, would be Kyler Murray. He's had a solid season, but not as impressive as Jacobs, I don't think. And then DK Metcalf has been pretty good, but he'd have to have more games like he did last week, I think, to really merit serious consideration for that award. And then if Gardner Minshew wasn't getting benched because Nick Foles was returning, I think he would still be in the discussion as well. But I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think definitely the safe choice of this would be Josh Jacobs. I mean, he was a guy that came into the league being really highly thought of. The only running back taken in the first round. So, yeah, he was kind of the guy that the Raiders wanted and definitely were willing to spend that early pick on him. And I think he somewhat lived up to that bill. Excuse me. And so he's, I mean, this just was not a very deep draft for offensive skill positions. So, and another guy you could have maybe gone to, but he's out for the year, is Jonah Williams from the Bengals. You know, he's a guy that I thought would probably make an early impact in the NFL, but he just hasn't been playing. gain. So, I would say definitely Josh Jacobs. Kyler Murray playing better than I thought he would, but still not elite. Not that rookie sensation that everyone was kind of hoping for. And then Gardner Minshew, I mean, a sixth-round pick. I don't think anyone expected that of him coming in and starting some games and playing really well. I mean, I know he had a lot of hype in college, and he's got the great story behind him and everything, but to play the way he has is kind of amazing. Not that I think he's ready to start in the league long-term, but just the fact that he could come in and like somewhat be effective and keep the status quo a little bit in Jacksonville is kind of amazing until Nick Foles gets back. So, but I would go with Josh Jacobs. I mean, he's definitely lived up to the billing, and I think the Raiders are using him fairly well.
Yeah, one other honorable mention I forgot to say, Terry McLaurin for the Redskins. He's had a pretty nice season. I know he's kind of cooled off the past few weeks, but still on pace for a good season and could be in that discussion, I think, still by season's end. So, Defensive Rookie of the Year, my pick for that would be, at this point in the season, Nick Bosa. He's had a really remarkable season. Like you said, I think he also deserves consideration for Defensive Player of the Year if he keeps it up. But his stats real quick, 21 tackles, 7 sacks, 1 forced fumble, 1 interception. And if you look at the advanced metrics like pass rush win rate and pressure rate, things that people like PFF chart, he's near the top of the league in those as well. So impact is even more impressive than I think the stats show for him, and he would be my front runner at this point in the season. But what do you think?
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I mean, kind of like, I won't repeat myself too much, but yeah, I mean, he's definitely lived up to that number two pick, and a lot of people thought he was going to be the number one pick, but the Cardinals got really desperate and needed a quarterback, so they decided to go other ways, and maybe they'll regret that one day. I'm sure Nick Bosa hopes they do, but I definitely think that he should have probably been the first overall pick, but you know, I mean, the 49ers got great value at number two overall. They got the best player, basically, in my opinion, at that pick. So, it's got to be Nick Bosa, just playing lights out and just looking like his older brother in more ways than once. So, it's really kind of cool to see two brothers in the NFL and both performing very, very well like they did at Ohio State.
Mm-hmm. And then last award I want to talk about, Coach of the Year. I think there's a few really good candidates this year for that award. For me, I think it's Kyle Shanahan is who I would take to win it, just because the 49ers, if you look at where they were last year, they were picking second in the draft. They were 4-12, basically second worst team in the league. And this year they're off to an 8-0 start, which I don't think anyone saw coming. So he would be my pick. A couple others that I would put in the conversation, Matt LaFleur, I think. The Packers have certainly exceeded expectations. And then also Sean Payton, because, I mean, the Saints are, what, 7-1, and they didn't even have Drew Brees for 5 games. They went 5-0 without him. So they've been awesome this year, too, even without their starting quarterback for a good chunk of the season. So I think those three are all good candidates, but I would go with Kyle Shanahan. What do you think?
Yeah, and, you know, I would probably go Kyle Shanahan as well. It's really impressive what Sean Payton has done, but we've seen it before. So it's nothing real new. We always knew he was a good coach. So I think Kyle Shanahan just deserves it based on the fact that he's never done it before. But as far as like rookie coach of the year, I would say definitely has to be Matt LaFleur. I mean, he's just outstanding. And I know they did have their hiccup last week, but overall he's had a really good strategy for games normally, and he's just completely transformed this team from an average to a really, really good team. So, I you know, you could really pick any three of those guys and make a pretty good argument, but I think your strongest argument is probably going to be Kyle Shanahan. I mean, you even look at like a team like the Cardinals. You know, they've improved, but they're nowhere near as good as the 49ers are. And they had a higher pick than the 49ers did, so it's just kind of a weird. It's almost just strange seeing them this good. Everyone keeps wondering, well, when are they going to lose? Maybe it's in 3 weeks versus the Packers. I don't know. But, yeah, I would definitely say that Kyle Shanahan, my pick, and then rookie coach of the year, I would say definitely LaFleur.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. So last thing I want to talk about here today is our reactions to the college football playoff rankings. You know, I just saw them for the first time today and was a little surprised by them, to say the least. So Ohio State comes in at number one. That was a little surprising to me. And then Penn State came in at number four ahead of Clemson. So, yeah, I thought both of those picks were surprising, those placings, I guess. What was your reaction to the college football playoff rankings?
Yeah, really. This is definitely probably the most surprising college football rankings since they started coming out in 2014. I was really not, I mean, I definitely consider Ohio State one of the best teams, but I really thought they'd be at least like number two, but to see them at number one was a little bit surprising. They did knock off a very good Wisconsin team. You know, they played a very soft non-conference schedule though. I would probably argue their best opponent was Cincinnati, who is ranked right now. They haven't lost a game since losing to Ohio State, but they got spanked pretty hard. But I don't ever consider Luke Fickell's squad in Cincinnati to be a real terrible team. So it's a little higher than I would expect, but I think they kind of deserve to kind of be up there among the elite. They've just blown out everybody, and it hasn't even been super close other than for, I would say, not even three quarters of the Badger game. It was somewhat close, but other than that, it's been just blowout city. I just don't see them slowing down anytime soon, maybe when they play Penn State. But, and leading to my next point, Clemson not being in the top four. I know they've had a very somewhat weak schedule so far. They did play Texas A&M, which is never an easy win, but it was at home. The ACC has been extremely, extremely weak in the rankings and overall. Florida State's bad, Miami's bad. Some of the teams you come to expect to be, you know, really good every year. So it kind of makes sense that Clemson's outside the top four, but at the same time, to see an undefeated team outside the top four that just came off winning a national championship. I know it's last year and everything, but it's almost like, wow, like they don't, they're just not getting the benefit of the doubt, which is, you know, somewhat good. I mean, the committee's not supposed to be biased and not say like, oh, hey, well, they won it last year, so they absolutely need to be ranked high this year. So I'm impressed with Clemson a little bit this year, but they haven't like blown out anyone to the point where it was just like an impressive win. So until they play like Wake Forest, until they play the winner of the other division in the ACC, they, you know, they've got a little bit to prove still. And I wouldn't read too much into it. I mean, the Big Ten championship is going to sort itself out. Ohio State still has to play Penn State. Alabama still has to play LSU this week. So Clemson's by no means out of the playoff argument. They're very much in it, but they've got a little work to do, and they got to keep winning. If they have a slip up, and it could cost them the playoffs this year. So those were my first two, and then the last one I would say would be Wisconsin at 13. I was really shocked. You know, the AP poll had them at 18, and I thought that was, you know, fairly generous considering they lost back-to-back games.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the college football playoff committee really respects those two losses. I think they realized that Wisconsin lost just by a fluke. It was like kind of a last-second field goal to win the game. And then, you know, there were some fumbles, interceptions at the end of the game that were uncharacteristic of this team. And then you also have the Ohio State game, which they were very competitive in, but then ended up losing. It's hard to blame them to lose to the number one team in the land. So I thought 15 would be more appropriate for the Badgers, but I can't complain with 13. I think that's great for them to be ranked that high still, and the committee still thinks that highly of them, and they're ranked just one spot behind, I think it was a Baylor, or,
one spot behind Baylor.
Baylor's undefeated. They're ranked ahead of Minnesota, who is also undefeated. So that kind of speaks volumes to what the committee thought of their week on conference schedule, and not really dominating any of the opponents like the Badgers have a little bit. So I guess other than the top five, I would say Wisconsin, Minnesota, standings are a little bit, their placement in the top 25 are a little bit surprising, but you know, I can kind of understand where they're coming from.
Yeah, I was also kind of surprised to see how high Wisconsin ranked, considering they lost back-to-back games, like you said. I think if I were to rank the top four in the college football playoff right now, I think I would put LSU at number one. They have 3 wins, I think, against top 10 teams, so I think they would deserve to have that number one spot. Mm-hmm. And then 2 and 3, I think you could argue between Ohio State and Alabama. I might put Ohio State there right now just because Alabama hasn't really played anyone yet. So, yeah, if they beat LSU this week, I'd probably flip those. I'd probably put Alabama at 2 then. But for right now, because of the way Ohio State dismantled Wisconsin, I think I'd put them at number 2, and then Alabama at 3, and then probably Clemson at 4. What would your rankings be of the top 4 right now?
You know, I mean, I've seen Penn State play. They didn't absolutely dominate Iowa on the road, but they did win, which is definitely a tough place to win. Not so much for the Badgers, but for Michigan and other teams. So, not trolling any Michigan fans out there, but I know that they did play Pitt, which is, you know, a Big Five or a Power Five conference team. So they did play kind of a, you know, a decent ACC team. I can't say the same for Wisconsin or Ohio State. Neither one of them played Power 5 teams this year. So I definitely have to give Penn State some credit. And I think I probably put them at 3. No, I wouldn't say 3. I'd probably put them at 4. I'd probably put Alabama at 2 right now. Just because I think if they do have Tua, they're definitely one of the best teams in the nation. And then I think Ohio State still is number 3 to me, just because we haven't really seen them play other than the Badgers, which, you know, that's a great win. Not disregarding that at all. But other than that one game, they haven't really played a whole lot of tough competition. They still have Michigan to play. They still have Penn State to play. They still have the Big Ten Championship. So they'll have plenty of reason to prove themselves as number one, and I think they can definitely do it, but they haven't quite shown me everything. And like you said, I think LSU number 1, Alabama 2, and then I go Ohio State, Penn State, Clemson. They've got a lot to prove too. Kind of a weaker non-conference, and then also, you know, I mean, their whole conference in general is very weak, so they haven't even played Wake Forest yet. So I would kind of also leave them out of the top 5, or top 4, I should say. But by no means, I don't think, like, I still think they're a playoff contending team. I don't think they're out, or they're going to be terrible this year, or they wouldn't be competitive if they did make the playoffs. But I just think that if the playoffs started today, I don't know if you can put them in. You could make an argument to put them in, but I think that, yeah, I would say LSU, Alabama, and then the two Big Ten teams. Those two conferences have been just so strong this year from top to bottom. So I think that, you know, all 4 of those teams deserve to be in at the end of the year from right now. I know one of those, or 2 of those 4 teams are going to eventually lose a game, but I think they should really both be considered for playoff berth even after one loss. Like, let's say Penn State loses to Ohio State and they don't make the Big Ten Championship, I think they still should be somewhat considered for a playoff run. And same with LSU or Alabama, whoever loses that game I think should still have a little bit of a shot at still making, even though neither one of the losers will make their championship games of their divisions. I think they still have to be in consideration, kind of like Ohio State was in 2015, or 2016, I should say.
Yeah, I definitely see where you're coming from on a lot of those things. I think, yeah, we'll see a lot of these teams still kind of prove themselves because there's still the conference championships. There's still some tough regular season matchups for a lot of these teams that are near the top of the pecking order. So could still see some shuffling of the, you know, college football playoff rankings in the weeks to come.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see how that plays out for sure.
Yeah, and they're definitely going to change. I mean, you're going to see a week-to-week change. I mean, we'll probably see a change this week, or we will see a big change this week after LSU plays Alabama. And then Penn State plays Minnesota. Let's say Penn State loses. Well, then that probably is going to drop them back quite a bit. But if they win, you know, maybe that boosts them up in the polls a little bit. Who knows? So, and then whoever loses the Alabama game is going to fall a little bit too. So I don't think much, but I think there will be some shuffling of teams. So I wouldn't read too much into this one. I would say the next one you could really put a lot more stock into.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to have a lot of these top four or five teams playing some better competition. I know Clemson's got, I believe, Wofford this week, or was that last week? But I think that was last week. So, I mean, they've got NC State they're playing this week. So, things are going to get tougher for these teams. We've got rivalry week still coming up. A lot of especially in the Big Ten, a lot of trophy games coming up. So I think the madness is far from over in college football. And we've got five teams that are undefeated for four spots. That's not going to hold up. They're going to be only three teams guaranteed at the most by the end of the year. So if you go undefeated, you're guaranteed to be in. And if you're not, well, you have a pretty decent shot at getting left out. So I think the college football world should be kind of put on notice that, hey, you can't lose one game anymore and still be considered, because there's so many teams that only have one loss and are still in it. So it's kind of put up or shut up time in the next few weeks, and I'm excited to see how it goes. It's going to be an interesting end of the year.
Yeah, it'll definitely be fun to see how this plays out, and I'm really excited for that Alabama-LSU game this weekend.
Yeah, I wish I could see it. I'm going to the Badger game this weekend against Iowa, so I won't be able to see it, at least live, but I'm expecting a real low-scoring affair there like there usually is. I don't think Alabama pulls away like they normally do, so it's going to be a great week of college football. You've got, I mean, even the Wisconsin game, two top 20 teams playing each other, so these rankings will look a whole lot different 1 week from today.
Definitely, definitely. Well, that's everything we had for this episode. We thank you for tuning in, and be sure to check out Kevin's Wisconsin Badger fan group on Facebook, and be sure to follow me on Twitter at Dan_Wusso, and check out my website, pigskinprodigies.com. As we get closer to draft season, I'll be rolling out more content over there fairly soon. So thanks again for tuning in, and we hope you'll join us in future episodes.